So I think in the context of all the other rookie shortstops, Addison Russell didn't look like he had that great of a year. But actually, he did. I mean, if you go back in the last decade, since 2006, looking at shortstops in their rookie season, age 22 or younger, only three other guys have hit 13 home runs in their rookie year at shortstop. They're Hanley Ramirez, 2006, Troy Tulowitzki, 2007, and Carlos Correa in 2015.
Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 77 of Flags Fly Forever, the Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Janella and George Bissell. We are actually doing something a little different tonight. We are recording a podcast as usual, but we are also doing a mock draft for Baseball Prospectus right now as we are recording this. So this is going to be interesting, huh?
I literally just took Albert Pujols like 10 seconds ago.
Yeah, you're putting your money where your mouth is.
That's for sure. It's mock draft Monday. Fired
I guess
up.
It's a mock. Yeah, this is the first time we've ever done this. I know other sites or websites have done this, but this is a first for Baseball Prospectus. So we're gonna talk about shortstops, but we're also going to occasionally chime in with what's going on in this mock draft, which will be up later in the week as you're listening to this.
We are. It's gonna be fun. A good time will be had by all, and we will occasionally chime in making fun of each other's picks, I am sure. So with that, you can read us all at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. It's two S's and two L's. You can email us at flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. Or you can rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. With that, we are talking shortstops. Wait.
I just want to make sure.
Damn it, Ben.
You should stop. Ben just took Shin Soo Chu, who Brett loves this year. So
I got sniped on Billy Hamilton, so I know the film.
Yeah.
I have a feeling there's some people out there, including like Yancey Eaton, friend of the show, who will be very excited. I mentioned him that would give like his eye teeth to be in the chat room or watching this draft live.
Well, the chat's the best part.
It's thrilling.
It really is.
Perfectly honest. It is absolutely thrilling.
I swear to God, JJ took JD Martinez just to mess with me.
He did. Well, that's what happens when you mock with we're mocking with 15 BP people, so we all know each other a little too well. So we're having a little fun.
Well,
with each other,
there are some non fantasy BP people too. So it's kind of interesting. You know, they know baseball. Obviously, it was kind of interesting to see how they're going. Like they're throwing a curve a little bit. Like Ryan Watt has told me he's never done a fantasy draft. This is his first one.
Yeah. Well, so, you got to learn sometime, I guess.
I guess so.
Like taking Byung-ho Park in the seventh round.
I can't wait.
I can't believe this is real.
Yeah, I'm going with the no infield strategy.
I have Goldie, so that's all I need.
I've drafted four outfielders, a utility guy, and two pitchers.
Yeah. Do you guys want to recap your picks real quick? Or
sure, we can do that before we
break. Yeah.
Right. So you can go first, Brett, because your roster is the most interesting.
I have an outfield of Giancarlo Stanton, Starling Marte, Lorenzo Cain, and Gregory Polanco. I have Prince Fielder at utility, and then I have Matt Harvey and Wade Davis in my pitching spots.
Yeah, and I have a very similar. I have Paul Goldschmidt. I had the third pick, and he fell, which is kind of interesting. But then I also have outfielders and pitchers. I have Charlie Blackmon, Carlos Gomez, Carlos Gonzalez, Chris Sale, Harris Familia, and Mark Melancon.
Impressive. I had the sixth pick in the first round, so I went with Manny Machado over Carlos Correa. Followed that up with Joey Votto, Ryan Braun, Carlos Carrasco in the fourth, Corey Seager in the fifth at pick 66, Adam Wainwright, and then Albert Pujols at pick 96.
Yeah, we'll kind of weave this draft in and out of this show. Just yeah,
we're not going to stay here for all 23 rounds in all likelihood. So we do apologize that you'll see the results up later in the week. We're not going to do a play by play, which if you want to listen to that, I can't even imagine.
No, I can't either. But so let's start by talking about shortstops. So let's look back to 2015 as we do. To the American League. So did it, Mike, surprise you how much more valuable Xander Bogaerts was than the next most valuable shortstop when you put this together?
Yes. I'm aware, I've been doing valuations for a long time. I'm aware that, the average is valuable, but I think it's the combination. It's not just the average. It's the idea that his average is so valuable, and it's not like he scored runs, he drove in runs, but he hit, seven home runs and stole 10 bases. There just wasn't a lot else there. I thought he would have – I would have guessed he was going to be about 24, 25 when I threw this together. I had no idea he was going to be this close to 30.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really close. It's it was a really valuable season. The counting stats and the average, it sneaks up on you, but it's definitely there. George, what did you notice about the valuations from last year?
Well, I think the most obvious thing that stands out is Carlos Correa. He had 432 plate appearances and earned $22, which was tied for second most in the AL with Elvis Andrews. There's little reason to think he's not going to be number one on this list. I mean, we'll talk about Xander Bogaerts later on in the show, but a lot of his value was driven by pretty high BABIP and some changes in his batted ball profile. But I think Correa easily is the top guy going forward. And Eric Ibar earned way more than I thought he would last year. He didn't really do a whole lot, but he just got a ton of playing time and was not terrible with it. So that's that.
Yeah, I should mention he was my player to target today, and even I often mention this that in only leagues it's obvious that these guys earn money, but he's even a big bargain right now and based on ADP and 15 team mix, because people aren't realizing the fact he's not a superstar by any means, but people aren't realizing, like you're saying, George, he's got a lot of stats here. Those steals are still pretty valuable in 15 team, and he's going practically as an end of the regular portion. Close to 300 or over 300 in NFBC right now. I mean, that's a pretty deep bargain.
Mm-hmm. So, one other thing that jumped out to me when I was looking at this, and this, ties in with some of these mid range guys that I wasn't expecting, is there's nobody really enthused about drafting Alexi Ramirez or Estrubel Cabrera this year, and they both earned $17 last year, which is a non insignificant amount.
Aren't they all in the NL now? Pretty much.
They are both in the NL, but we'll get to that when we talk about the split. The AL is a weird place for shortstops right now. Anyone else you guys want to talk about here?
I mean, I think we touched upon the general themes. The other guy who kind of jumps out is Francisco Lindor. It's funny. We all believe and think that Correa is going to be a superstar and Lindor is going to be next tier or well below that. And I agree with that. But Lindor earned a dollar less than a dollar fewer than Carlos Correa did, and three more at bats. So I think we all agree with the premise, but even with Lindor slipping somewhat this year, and we'll get to swing it to the tiers, I think that there's the separation between them, at least, and what they earned last year is misunderstood.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really fair.
It's going to come down to where the power slips back to and where the stolen bases go up to. If he's 10 home runs and 25 steals, that's a heck of a year. But if it's, you know, 10 home runs and 15 steals, it's not as good, especially if the average comes down. So I don't know. He's going to be an interesting guy to watch this year, that's for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about the National League, because the National League, you know, with the American League in transition, the National League is in transition too, but in a slightly different way. The NL picked up Jose Reyes and Estrubel Cabrera, Alexi Ramirez. It picked up a lot of additional depth, and there were a number of shortstop eligible players who earned double digits last year. Where does this place some of these players that finished in the $10 to $15 range that look like they might not really have jobs this year?
If you're thinking, the guy who jumps out to me is somebody like Wilmer Flores, and he's actually not even listed here because he wasn't eligible, but you know, he's someone who jumps out at me as that kind of guy. I mean, Ian Desmond, who doesn't even have any kind of job, is at $15. It's a weird group. It's a weaker group. There aren't as many steals. You know, we talked in the American League about all those steals. You've got John Segura, and really a big drop off to the next guy. And you know, Chris Owings, who, you know, as you point out, doesn't even really look like he has a place to play at the moment.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that playing time shakes out in Arizona. Mm-hmm. But anything else about last year's valuations before we move on? Do we need to talk about Yunel Escobar?
Well, I mean, he's third base eligible here in 20. You know, we all know he's a pretty big BABIP fluke, and he's moving to a park where I just don't like him at all. You know, I could see him here in 20 last year, and only I could see him earning 10 next year.
I mean, Brandon Crawford just looks so much better, especially when you look at Jung Ho Kang missing, what, at least a month or two this year, most likely. We're not really sure what the timetable is going to be until we actually get into spring training, but there just aren't a whole lot of great options here. It depends where Desmond goes. Johnny Peralta is pretty much, I think, a lock to be a top five NL shortstop this year, I think. There's just not a whole lot. I mean, there's obviously guys like Corey Seager that are going to come up and perform, but there's just not a ton after the real elite guys in the NL.
Yeah. So what are we, I mean, with the position as weak as it is overall, what should the plan be heading into drafts? Is it something you have to reach for with the top guys? Is it a position that, you know, you should really kind of forget about for a while? It seems to me like the guys who are in that middle range at shortstop are less likely to be middle infield options as compared to those same options at second base. So, how much does that affect things?
I think it has some effect. You know, we talk about this all the time with stretching at the position. I do think you have to stretch to some degree, but you also have to be careful not to go overboard with that. There's definitely a danger in, you know, like, say, extending on a Correa in an auction environment, you know, for example, and pushing him into the upper 30s, because you do reach the point where it's almost nothing but downside.
Mm-hmm. George, you have any general thoughts there?
No, I think you're right. If you don't get a guy pretty early on, it's a position you can kind of just wait on entirely. I don't think there's much of an incentive to really do anything until the late rounds. And you can find, like you said, Brett, there are other options at, whether it's at second base, you can find a middle infield spot there. I think the end game options are a little more interesting than at shortstop.
As I try and figure out
who to pick, this is an interesting decision here.
10 seconds.
I'm going with Verlander.
Okay. Top of the queue.
Hey, look at his DRA last year. Guy was good.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
It's an advanced stat there, folks. Had to drop it.
Yeah. So let's go. Well, actually, let's take a quick break, and then we will come back and talk about the 2016 tiers. And welcome back. So let's walk through the shortstop tiers for 2016. Mike, you put these together. These are now up at baseballperspectives.com. Why don't you walk us through the deep five-star tier here at the position?
Well, there's one person in the tier, and you know we go through these arguments every year. He could probably, I think, unlike some years, no one else would belong here, and you could argue this player doesn't either. But we went with Carlos Correa. You know, he on the pace that he was on, you know, we know that he could have earned or potentially earned a lot more than he did. You know, or he could have earned in, like, I think 37 in AL only. And George, I think I gave you 33 in mixed earlier today when you asked me, or yep, maybe it was 32. But, you know, he's somebody who, you know, we know the potential. I think you have to build in some regression or backsliding. But even if you do that, and even if you think his current ADP of, you know, six overall or really close to that is too high, he's a first rounder, even if you're discounting him. I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely safe to say. It's just a matter of where in the first round he's going. Is he, Mike, is he a top 10 pick for you?
He's right outside of the top 10 for me. I believe I have him 11. You know, but some of that is I'm valuing speed and guys like Altuve a little bit higher. I think if you don't do that, you could have Correa like 9 or 10 fairly easily.
Okay. And George, what do you think?
Well, I actually had this decision to make tonight in our BP mock draft where I had the 6th pick, and you're sitting there looking at guys like Manny Machado, Nolan Arenado, Chris Bryant, Miguel Cabrera. You have several options, and Correa's there on the board. I took Machado over him. I think after Machado, just because he's older, we've seen him do it before. He has a longer track record. Machado does. I think there's just a lot of risk there, but I'd have a hard time not taking him after, you know, pick 7 in that range. It's such a tough thing to do to talk about Correa because he's obviously insanely talented. There's no doubt about that. But you really are looking at sort of a once-in-a-generation type talent here. And the obvious parallel is Mike Trout, who a couple of years ago burst onto the scene. There's really no historical comp for Carlos Correa. I mean, if you just go back through using the Baseball Reference Play Index, if you punch in his numbers from last season, basically 279, 22 home runs, and 14 stolen bases. In the last decade, only 4 of the shortstops have ever replicated those numbers in a single season. It's Jimmy Rollins, the year he won the NL MVP in 2007. Hanley Ramirez did it 3 times, which is unthinkable now, given what he's developed into. And Troy Tulowitzki did it once in 2009, and Ian Desmond as well. So there's only been 5 guys who've done that, and since 1901, no shortstop age 21 or younger has ever been that good offensively in their debut. So there's not a whole lot of historical comps for Correa, which makes it so hard to project him going forward. I mean, the obvious thing to do is project in a little bit of regression, especially if you look at some of the underlying numbers, like his ground ball rate, which could cap his power, the home run to fly ball rate. But at the same time, he's such a unique talent, I don't even know what you do. I think you just take him in the first round and hope that he is, like Trout, a really once-in-a-generation type talent that's going to carry your team.
Yeah, which he certainly could be.
You know, I the one thing about Correa before we leave this, because it's so fascinating. I mean, we could probably talk about him for, you know, half an hour. I'm not saying we will, but he's not like Trout in the sense, I know there's a positional adjustment, but Trout had such a high, you know, TAV or adjusted OPS, and I feel like everybody was trying to, you know, knock him down, a number of people in the industry. And it's weird with Correa, it's like the opposite. Like, nobody I think because of Trout, nobody really wants to knock him down too far, but it's entirely possible that he could have a season where, you know, he's in the top 40 or top 50, which is still really good. And no one is really addressing that possibility. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but I think it's more in the realm of possibility than it was with Trout, who was just so special.
Mike, you talked about the valuations earlier on, but in order to return a first-round value, a hitter in a standard mixed league has to earn about, I think it was $32 was the figure last year.
Yeah, it's a little bit lower than that in a mix, but that's about right.
Right. Correa was on pace, if you prorate his stats over the full season from a year ago, he was on pace for a $33 season. And that's, you know, peak, you know, not any regression from what he did last year, which was outstanding. So I think it's just going to be really hard for him to justify a first-round price tag. But I think even if he falls short of that, he's not going to be, you know, overwhelmingly below that. Like, we're not talking about a guy who's going to finish outside the top 100. So I think there is some risk, but it's not as big as some of the guys we're going to talk about a little bit later on at the position.
Yep, agreed. So let's talk about some of those players later on at the position. The four-star tier is really if you take out Correa, the four-star tier is really the changing of the guard. We have the old top guy to start, and then you have three more of the exciting young shortstops at the position, with Xander Bogaerts, Corey Seager, and Francisco Lindor trailing Troy Tulowitzki. So, old guard first. So, how concerned are you, Mike, that this is sort of the beginning of the end for Troy Tulowitzki?
I'm concerned. I wouldn't say I'm alarmed. You know, his numbers last year, whether you factor in cores or no, they just weren't very good. And I think that's kind of what gives me pause with him. I mean, they weren't bad numbers. They just, usually with Tulo, he was the kind of player in the past who was always hurt but always managed to put up these, like, stellar numbers. Last year, his numbers were just good. It wasn't hurt until that weird injury at the end of the season where it looked like he went down with a, you know, with a shot. But it's just, so I'll say I'm concerned. I'm not alarmed about him, but I'm a little worried that this is the beginning of a slow and steady decline.
So if that's the case, so let's talk about the players behind him. I'm gonna play a little game here. If you had, and I know you rank Tulowitzki ahead of each of these players, but I want to see how much conviction there is in the rankings, at least in the distances between them. If you had $100 in your pocket, and you had to split that $100 between Troy Tulowitzki and Xander Bogaerts, to see who would have the better 2016 season, what would your split be?
It's almost 50-50. I could really see making an argument for Bogaerts the other way. Now, Bogaerts, you know, as we talked about, where some of the risk is with him is that I think we all think he's going to get better. You know, we all know the power is going to bounce up, but, you know, sometimes we've seen with players like Eric Hosmer, for example, that doesn't automatically happen. So I'm fairly confident that it's going to be close between the two of them. I'd say it's probably 51-49 using that example.
Okay. So same question now, but Troy Tulowitzki versus Corey Seager.
Probably 65-35, just because as much as I like Seager long-term, he's a guy I could be very wrong on, and he could be this year's Korea. I also think there could be some consolidation with him as well. I keep thinking, you know, comps are bad, but I keep thinking about Brett Lowry and the big year he had, and everybody got all excited, and it really feels like people are reaching on Seager based on, what, like a little over 100 at-bats?
Yeah.
You know. No offense to Seager as a talent, you know, just as a long-term, or I should say as an immediate proposition.
And then finally, same question, but for Francisco Lindor.
70-30, just because, you know, with Lindor, all we've seen is half a season, and I agree with a lot of what George said on him. I think that I believe in him as a player. I believe in his defense, obviously, but the power, I'm kind of skeptical that he's going to repeat that.
All right. George, do you have any particularly strong thoughts on either of these three young guys for 2016?
Well, I'll do just a quick hit on all three. I think that's probably the most efficient use of the time here. Troy Tulowitzki, the big concern, which I don't think anyone touched on, but his plate discipline really was not good last year. He struck out 114 times, which was the most he's had in a single season since 2007, and his walk rate was the lowest of his entire career. His average is going to be driven by this sort of superhuman BABIPs he's posted. He's been over 330 in the last 3 years. I think that, along with his injury history, I mean, he's terrifying to me, I think. You know, he's like that puppy monkey baby commercial. I don't really know what to make of Tulowitzki going forward, because...
Are we going to talk about Super Bowl commercials? Because I'd really rather not. There was also the walking, you know, intestine, and I just, I don't really want to talk
about
it.
I've seen that one before.
See, I had not. Maybe I'm blessed for not watching enough TV.
Yeah, you might be blessed.
Yeah.
My personal favorite was the Jim Gaffigan KFC one. I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, I don't. Man, I'm concerned with Tulowitzki. He's 31. There's a lot of risk there. Corey Seager, let me give you guys a player A and player B blind player comparison for 2016 using Pakoda projections from the BP annual, which if you haven't bought it, you should go do that. Player A, 565 plate appearances, 63 runs, 21 homers, 76 RBI, 2 steals, a 263 average. Player B, 608 plate appearances, 64 runs, 16 homers, 71 RBI, 3 steals, 263 average. I'll tell you, player A right now is Corey Seager. Who do you think player B is?
That's a good question.
Shortstop?
Yes.
It's a shortstop? Is it Brandon Crawford?
That would have been my first guess. That's who, yeah. I was looking at initially for a comp.
Is it Struble Cabrera?
No, it's not. It's 34-year-old Johnny Peralta, who's going about 200 picks later than Corey Seager.
Yeah, I like Peralta, as everybody here knows. And mm-hmm. I shouldn't, you know, given that I had him in tout, I really shouldn't be that surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers don't sound that impressive for Seager on the projection, but not a lot of guys have really done that in their debut. 20 homers with a 260 average, so... I think the downside with Seager is that if he's not insanely good, he's not much better than what you can get a lot later on in draft.
Yeah.
And finally, Xander Bogaerts, I'll just touch on him real quick. He had a 53% ground ball rate, so I don't think the power is going to really be there unless his batted ball profile changes. He had a 370 BABIP last year, which puts the 320 average at risk. But I think he's a pretty much a lock to hit 300 going forward, which is going to drive a lot of his value. Yeah. That's all I got.
Cool. So let's move on to the three-star tier, starting with the homeless one. How do you approach Ian Desmond in early drafts, since we don't know where he's going to play? A corollary of that question is, what do you think the odds are that he is still unemployed on opening day?
Well, to steal Twitter friend Andy Money 69's joke, and I'm sure he doesn't listen to this podcast, this is pointless to even invoke him very carefully. I think I just don't really like taking players, and we've talked about this offline, Brett. I don't like taking players who are, you know, don't have a home. I know things could work out. You know, I know he could wind up signing, say, with the White Sox, and it'd be a favorable situation. But we're reaching the point now where it's almost the middle of February. I'm sure he's working out. You know, I'm sure he can get up to speed pretty quickly. But sometimes in the past, we've seen these players kind of develop a little rust and get off to a slow start. And Desmond's a guy who just didn't look good for most of the year. He had a couple of really good bursts. You know, I remember, you know, we benched him in labor last year when the Nationals are facing Greinke and Kershaw. And, of course, Desmond had one of the best weeks that he had all year because, you know, of course, that's just the way that goes. But I just have a lot of cynicism about Desmond, about the contact rates, about what's going to happen with him. You know, Brett, to your point, you know, when a guy moves to the American League, there's always that tax that he has to pay. And, you know, if it's going to be bad for Todd Frazier, who you talked about last week, I think it could be worse for Desmond, whose contact rates have never been very good, even when he's played well.
We saw it with Tulo last year, late too, going over to Toronto. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. You know, if you told me he was going to end up with a National League club, even if it was the Padres, where in a relatively poor home park, I'd be all for it. But yeah, I mean, Desmond going to the American League is obviously not ideal. And if he, you know, if he showed signs of why there's concern around him last year. And, the question is how much of that is going to carry over into his 2016 season. I think he's safer than I think the consensus, but I don't know. I still am a little concerned. I'm not that concerned he's not going to have a job on opening day. I don't think that's going to happen, but you know, but he could have a shortened spring training, and that's never a good thing either.
From an ADP standpoint, there's a pretty big divide between the top of the position and sort of the middle tier. There's the top five, which are the guys we've already mentioned, who are going in the, you know, first to fifth round. But then Desmond's going in, I think, the eighth round in NFBC early ADP. And then there's no one else until the 10th round. So from the fifth to the 10th round, there's only one player going, and that's Desmond. So there's a real big divide between the middle round guys and really the top of the position, which is something I think we've touched on a little bit tonight.
Oh, yeah. Huge divide.
Yep.
So the rest of the tier is some interesting names, some that are on the way up, some that are on the way down, some that may not play for a while because they are shitty people. Let's talk about the speedsters first. The two guys ranked right next to each other in these rankings are Elvis Andrus and John Segura. Their projections are going to be pretty close going into the season. Do you think that Arizona will be a tick up or a tick down for Segura's value?
It's tough because I'd say he's moving to a good park, but you know, then he wasn't a good park. You know, the thing about Segura, you know, we're talking about, you know, volatile situations. You know, the situation with his, you know, very young son passing away a couple of years ago. Customarily, we don't like to make excuses for players for things off the field, but you know, as we talked about when that happened, I can't even imagine. I think there was some writing about this. You know, I don't remember who it was, but it might have been Ken Rosenthal. You know, just talking about the idea that in this case, a change of scenery might help him. You know, the thing about Segura is he hasn't been he hasn't been a very good player in fantasy, as we all know. I'm sorry, the opposite. He hasn't been a very good player in real life. His on-base percentage has been very poor, but he's been an asset in fantasy. And, you know, he's moving from a rebuild to a team that's trying to go for it. And, you know, even if Arizona winds up being the 2016 version of the 2015 Padres, I do think that it's going to be an improvement for him in fantasy, even if it is an incremental one. Good pick, by the way, Brett. He was the guy I was looking at as well.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
For the listeners out there, that is, I just took Mike Moustakas with the 159th pick.
That's a very good pick.
I like that value a lot.
His NFBC is 141.
What was that?
His NFBC is, as the last I looked at it, was 141.
Yeah, and I have him a tick ahead of his ADP anyway.
Yeah, well, I do too.
We said a lot of good things about him last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we did.
Yeah, this has been a really weird draft at this point. I think some of the non-fantasy people in this have kind of impacted the way this goes and have made it more unpredictable.
Yeah, slightly. Not too much.
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah.
And George, I think, has been on auto draft now for about 3 rounds. So.
Yeah, we had some technical issues. I'm more focused on that than making sure I don't get stuck with Byung-ho Park.
So we, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I have too much speed, as I always do. And, you know, speaking of shortstops, it'll be a good segue. I took Elvis Andrus.
Yeah. He hit for more power last year than I thought he did.
I that's probably about it from him, though, even in that park. I just don't see him hitting more than, like, say, 8 to 10 home runs.
Right. I mean, previously he'd been, what, around 60% with his ground ball rate. He dipped that down under 50% for, like, the first time ever last year, which, I mean, slight uptick. I mean, can you guys see 30 steals again? Or what do you think is his ceiling? What's his ceiling?
I wouldn't be comfortable betting on 30 steals. I think it's probably more in the 25 range.
Yeah, I when I say I can see it, I mean, can I see it? Yes. You know, would I bet on it? No.
It's off in the horizon somewhere.
It's there. I mean, it's there if everything goes right for him. But, you know, it's that thing about Andrus. He's one of those players. It's funny. At this point, the real-life contract actually doesn't look too bad just based on where money has gone in baseball. But I think when the Rangers signed him, you know, they were expecting him to become like a franchise player. And he's just not going to be that guy. But in fantasy, again, you know, he's somebody who I think where he's going, you know, and I got him – you know, where did I get him? Like the 11th round? I think that's okay.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. So is there anyone else in this tier that you guys want to talk about?
I want to touch on Addison Russell briefly, if I could. Is that cool?
You may.
The prevailing narrative here with Addison Russell is that he had sort of a dismal rookie campaign, and I think that's only the case if you compare him to a once-in-a-generation type offensive talent in Carlos Correa, a guy who might be just as good in Corey Seager, who hit like 356 when he came up in September, and then Francisco Lindor, who put up power numbers like we had never seen from him in the minor leagues. So I think in the context of all the other rookie shortstops, Addison Russell didn't look like he had that great of a year, but actually, he did. I mean, if you go back in the last decade, since 2006, looking at shortstops in their rookie season, age 22 or younger, only 3 other guys have hit 13 home runs in their rookie year at shortstop. They're Hanley Ramirez, 2006, Troy Tulowitzki, 2007, and Carlos Correa in 2015. I don't think there's this huge step forward coming from Addison Russell, but I think he was good. And there was a great piece Sahadev Sharma wrote, our former BP colleague, where he talked about some of the adjustments that Russell made in season, especially after the All-Star break. He really changed his approach, shortened up his leg kick, and really started to hit much better in the second half of last year. So I think Addison Russell's better than people think. And I could easily see a step forward from him this year. Right now, he's going right around pick 150. He's 140th off the board in early NFBC ADP. I just think that's really low compared to some of the other guys who are going right on the top 50, 60 picks, who I don't think the ceiling's that far off.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair on Russell. I mean, Russell was someone who people loved last year and was improved over the course of the season, yet is not being considered in the realm of those four-star tier guys. And while I think that's fair to an extent, I think he has all the potential to finish ahead of someone like Francisco Lindor in 2016, and even compete with Seager and Bogarts for a top 5 spot in the at the position.
Yep, he's better than his ADP. That's basically my point.
Yeah. Anyone else, Mike, anyone else you want to talk about in this tier?
Not in this tier, no.
Okay. So let's move on to the next tier. The two-star tier is well, all these tiers are a mix of interesting type players. But Mike, I want to talk about the guy who you have as your value pick in the two-star tier, because it feels like there's potentially a good amount of value here given his playing time and his new situation.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, but Eric Ibar is somebody who he's been a value pick for our staff and for me the last 2 years, the last 3 years that we've run this article. And the thing about Eric Ibar is I get it. He's not the most exciting player. He's at the point now where he doesn't even, he didn't steal 20 bases last year. He didn't have much pop. I think people look at him and they're disappointed because, at one point, I think people were hoping for 10 to 15 home runs and maybe 30 to 35 steals. But when you look at what shortstops contribute, particularly in a 15-team mixed league, when you look at what, you're going to get out of players, even if you think that the PFM's a little bit too robust with steals, he's still probably a good 5 to 6 rounds conservatively below where he should be. And he's being drafted as a borderline back-end bottom barrel guy. And that's very alliterative, but I think that's just way too far back for somebody who's going to contribute fantasy value in every format but, say, a 10-team mixed league.
I'm just going outside the top 300 in ADP. That's really low.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, and he's going to be who's going to hit leadoff in Atlanta?
Someone has to.
Well, that was my other point. I wrote this today. So I picked him for our target piece, and I wrote about him. And the thing about him, congratulations, you just got his Drupal Cabrera, by the way, George.
But awesome.
Yeah, the thing about him is that he's in a lineup that the top lineup, for as bad as the team is, it's not bad at all. You've got Markakis, who hasn't hit for power but can hit. You got Freeman, who's still very good. And, you've got four guys up there who I think all could be productive. You've also got Inciarte. So if you're looking at the team and saying they're going to be bad, Ibar's going to lose some, runs batted in, being toward the top of the lineup, as the bottom lineup's awful, I think that's fair. But the team itself is not, just a complete wasteland. This isn't the 1962 Mets, so Ibar will produce enough value in runs and runs batted in that I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the bottom of the lineup's going to be atrocious, but
When you're digging this deep at the position, sometimes the most important variable is playing time. And I think that's exactly what you can count on from Ibar. There's nobody who's taking that job away from him unless he gets traded or something midseason.
Yeah, that I completely agree with. So what is your comfort level with Jung Ho Kang given his early season injury? Do you think it is realistic for us to expect him to be playing by May 1st?
I reached out to a couple of people on Twitter, a couple of beats that I or pirate followers I talked to, and I'm hearing two different stories. I'm hearing one story that he could just miss the minimum amount of time or miss a couple weeks and be back in mid-April, maybe a little bit later. And then I'm hearing some people say that he might be back closer to June. So I think it's possible he's back. I'd probably put it at about like 50-50. I think it's close, but it's not something I necessarily want to bet on either.
The thing that scares me is he's going to be 29 at the start of April. Like, we don't know how he's going to come back from this. I mean, a lot of guys have. And modern medicine's gone. Yeah, there have been so many advances with surgeries, and guys come back now in record time, but you just never know. I mean, the success rate is not 100% here. So with a leg injury, you just really never know with a guy who's older. Is that fair? Yeah. Or
no, I think that's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
But if he were fully healthy, do you think he would be a clear three-star guy?
Yes.
I'd take him over Addison Russell, probably.
I mean, he'd probably, I was going to say, you know, I know George likes Russell. He'd probably be borderline four-star. I think I'd still keep him in the three-star, but he'd be close.
Yep. It's just the injury kind of clouds everything. We have no idea what kind of hitter he's going to look like when he shows up.
That's an important point about, like, all these rankings, because, you know, sometimes people will argue with us, you know, and we'll have these internal arguments too. So it's certainly not just, you know, people outside or, you know, coming at us in the comment sections. As things move along, you know, as things evolve, there are players like Gong, you know, like Jose Reyes, who, you know, I know nobody wants to even, like, touch with a 10-foot pole, but these are guys we'll definitely revisit as things move along. You know, we do that all the time. We're not averse to it by any means. And it's something I definitely, you know, can see doing with Gong.
I mean, you have to, in a ranking, you have to hedge against the possibility that he misses a significant amount of time. You just can't project 600 plate appearances like he's going to come back in mid-April or something.
Yeah, it's also tough because if you take, you know, one player like that, depending on the format, I think you're okay. You just want to be really careful, you know, not taking too many of those risks, because, again, unless it's a shallow mix, you could really torpedo your team in a hurry.
He's going pretty high in terms of ADP, too. I mean, he's going pick 173, which is top 10 at the position right now. So people are not shying away from him, despite the pretty obvious concerns.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, the guy who I want to bring up, and we'll piggyback on the conversation about John Segura and Elvis Andrus from the last tier. I am going to go out on a limb and say that I do not think there's any tangible difference between Elvis Andrus, John Segura, and Ketel Marte. I think Marte is being strongly overlooked. I think he's going to have this job. I think he may very well lead off like he did for a chunk last year. I think he's a good natural hitter. He's got potential 25 to 30 steal speed. What am I missing with Marte here? Anything?
You know, I think the thing, I don't want to say you're missing this. I think he's decent. I'm a little bit more down on him than I think everyone else is. There's nothing wrong with Marte, but if, you know, if we go back to Correa, for example, and we kind of look at the argument that, you know, if you project his season out to 162 games, he'll do this. If you do that with Ketel Marte, you know, I think what you're looking at is an Alcides Escobar or an Ibar. And don't get me wrong, Marte has more of a ceiling than those guys, you know, because he's younger and he could get better, and I don't dispute that. But I do feel like right now, you know, I think his ADP among shortstops is, what, 10th or 11th overall. I don't have it open because we're, you know, in the middle of this mock draft where I'm going to take every speed player imaginable because I'm half paying attention.
Mike, he's actually 14, pick 228.
Okay, so he's dropped, yep, a little bit since I've looked at him last. You know, so there's nothing really wrong with him. But I'm just a little bit wary that, you know, where I'm seeing him taken, there's kind of more growth being built in or being looked at it, and none of the downsides being considered at all.
Brett, I'm with you on this a little bit. Who do you think is the better bet to get 25 steals out of that group? Andrus, Segura, or Marte? Because I think it might be Marte.
Better bet just for the steals?
Probably. But he's going to have a higher on-base percentage. I think, like, Marte overall might be just as good, and then the speed only really cements that. I think he's got higher upside there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if I'm betting on one just for speed purposes, it might be Segura, but it's not a big difference between the three of them, and I think Marte is the better bet he's definitely the better bet of the three of them to hit for average.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Not an exciting tier.
Yeah, it's not super exciting. And anyone else? Is this the year that Starlin Castro reemerges as a top 10 shortstop, or I guess second baseman, but. He'll be shortstop eligible for this year.
Not with a 55% ground ball rate. It's not going to matter where he plays.
Fair enough. So where is there anyone else you guys want to talk about here before we get to our favorite game?
Nope.
All right. So let's go down to the one star tier. It's bulky. It's fun. Who is your guy here, George? You go first this week, I believe.
Cool. I'll take the most obvious choice, I think. It's similar. Actually, I'm going to go off the board entirely. I don't think he's even in one of the tiers. Orlando Arcia of the Brewers, Oswaldo's better brother. Sorry, Ben. had to do that. Well, we were talking about it off the air, but there's a good chance that he's up mid-season. We're talking June, July. That range, I think that's realistic. The only option they really have at short right now is Jonathan VR. I know David Stearns really likes him. He's a guy who scouted him, brought him along in Houston, and I think believes that he's a quality major leaguer. But other than speed, he doesn't bring a whole lot to the table fantasy-wise, and I think at some point Arcia is just going to be too good for them to resist holding him down any longer. I want to say we had Arcia ranked at BP as a top 15 prospect this year. Am I right on that, Brett?
You are right. He is top 15 prospect.
Look, people like JP Crawford a lot, and I get it. He's probably a better player, but I think the odds of Crawford being up this year are really slim unless you're talking about a September debut. There's a chance Arcia that he gets this job in June. I think that's a more realistic probability than we see a guy like Crawford come up. Or even Trey Turner, who's kind of blocked right now for no reason. I think Arcia, the speed is going to matter, and I think that's a name. You can get him in the last round if you have the ability to either stash him or keep an eye on him on the waiver wire. That's a guy I kind of want to have this year if he's up.
All right. Mike?
I'm going with who's in the article, and this is kind of the – it's a player that nobody in real life should like, and I get the downside, but – Alexei Ramirez just produces in fantasy. You've got to take a bit of an ugly batting average hit with him, and he is moving out of the cell and moving to Petco. Although Petco did have, was a little bit better last year than it's been in the past. But I just think people are really discounting him. As I point out in the article that's up today, Alexei Ramirez out-earned everybody in the two-star tier last year, with the exception of Alcides Escobar. So I just can't believe, I kind of get the downside with him. I get that nobody likes him. I get that he's, I don't want to say a terrible player in real life, but just kind of a subpar player. But I think we're really underestimating him by just kind of completely blowing him off.
Yeah. I'm cool blowing him off.
Okay. Well, I'll take the value if he's sitting there.
Yeah. I kind of think he's done. It saddens me to say that, but I think
it shouldn't sadden you. I mean, I like I said, I don't like him as a player, but I just don't see, he might seem done, but it's sort of that question. 30 teams have to field shortstops. There's a number of teams that are, tanking or rebuilding or whatever you want to call it these days. And who's going to play for San Diego if it's not him?
Boy, if only they had a prospect Trey Turner.
He's going to play.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not be mean about Trey Turner.
No, well, especially when he's the guy that I'm going to take.
Yeah,
nice segue.
That's why we're the best in the industry, right? Am I right? Uh-huh. Come on.
So Turner is clearly the upside play because he's, right now he's not. He's going to start the season in the minors, but I think he could if Danny Espinosa does Danny Espinosa things. I think he could beat Orlando Arcia up to the majors. And the one thing that Turner has going for him is that even if he gets the call at the beginning of June, he still has the potential to steal 30 bases. That's his fantasy impact. He may not be a great batting average guy. He may not contribute much in power, but he can steal bases. And that is a wonderful thing when you're just trying to squeeze value out of a final spot. So he's my guy.
Yeah, next week's Labor Week.
This is true. It's very, very exciting.
Probably going to record the labor draft a little bit later, but then, you know, bounce back.
You guys are going out there for it?
Yeah, no, it's
I'm
online.
I'm going to my office.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't remember. I should come up. You know, Brett's house is nicer than mine. I should come up and we should do it there.
If you want to make the drive, you're more than welcome to come and do it.
God.
Sounds like an awesome reality
TV show. I'll bring beers and maybe we'll have a deal.
Yeah. We will have to plan that offline.
Yep.
Anyway, that is it for shortstops, thank God. And we will be right back to close things up. We are back. Thank you for listening to episode 77 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. Check us out at baseballprospectus.com. We are in the middle of our fantasy positional series covering everything from soup to nuts in every position. We are obviously in shortstop this week and move on to outfield next week. We also are doing our top 10 prospects lists and lots of other fun things. So come and check us out. You can find us on Twitter. I said what they were before, so if you really want to know what our handles are, go back and listen to the beginning of the show again. But I am Brett, Mike is Mike, George is George, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye, guys.